Okay, so what we're going to do today is like this. I want to finish up. We didn't finish the chapter 6 yet in Tanya. So I want to finish it off today. But I want to start chapter 7 because I want to... We're going to take a two-week break after today because school holidays, we'll take a break. And then we'll start Perek Zayin, but I want to take that as a sort of... take that slowly. So we'll finish off Perek Vav, and then if there's time, I'll just do a little bit of a mimer from on this week's parsha, which would be nice. Okay. So, last time, he started talking about, in Perek Vav, at the beginning of chapter 6, he started talking about the, he started talking about the Nefesh HaBamis and its powers. So just like the Nefesh HaLakis has 10 powers, so does Nefesh HaBamis. But they have 10 powers of Klippa, and so on and so forth. Then, in the course of the Perek, he defines the word Klippa. Right? He says that Klippa means anything that's not Hashem. And we talk a lot about it, about how to approach that, and what does that mean. Because it sets the bar extremely high. So Kedusha means something where Hashem can dwell. Something that has either a conscious awareness of Hashem all the time, or potential, like the Neshama, a mitzvah, Kedusha, and so on. But everything else is not Hashem. It doesn't have to be necessarily forbidden. It doesn't have to be evil. It doesn't have to be immoral. It just can be ungodly. If it's ungodly, it's Klippa, right? And therefore, when we engage in that, anything we do in this world that's not L'shem Shemayim, it's not for the sake of heaven, it's not to serve Hashem, basically is the concept of Klippa. And serving Hashem means different ways. We explained last time there's the idea of Kol Ma'asecha L'shem Shemayim, doing everything for the sake of heaven, like working or eating for the sake of being strong and serving Hashem. Or even deeper than that, sometimes we have this idea of Kol Durchecha De'ed, whatever I do, I can see godliness, like the Friedrich Rebbe brings about a businessman who sees Hashgacha Pratis in every step of the way, and he sees the hand of Hashem, and he kind of serves Hashem as he's going along. Okay. However, the Tanya at the end says, however, that we need to understand that in Klippa itself, there are two types of Klippa. Okay? And until the end of this parak, he's going to explain one type of Klippa, and then in the next parak, he's going to explain the second type of Klippa. So it's the top of the page, if you have the time, the top page, Yud Aleph. Oh, the paging is a bit difficult. It says like the opposite side of 20. Yeah, you got that there? Yeah, and he says, Ella. Right, the top line there towards the end of the line. Ella Sha Klippa is saying the Chloka is L'shtei Madregas. He says, the Klippa, right, is divided into two levels. Zu L'mato Mizu. One level lower than the other. And in this, the end of this parak, till the end of this parak, he explains the lower level. Hamadrega hatachtoina, the lower level, he sholosh klipois hatmeois, verois legamri. These are three types of klipa. He never explains to Tanya why they're called three and why there's three different ones, but it's just the concept of having three components of klipa, which is based on a pasuk, as we'll soon see, right? Hein sholish klippas hatzmeyos, there are three klippas, impurified, verois, legamri, and completely bad. Ve'emem toiv klal, and they have no good. Right? Ve'nikru be'merkeves yechesko. And it's referred to, in the Merkava Yechesko. I don't know what the Merkava Yechesko is, it's the vision of Yechesko, which is the celestial chariot that Yechezkel saw in his vision, right? It's a haftorah that we read the first day of Shavuos. And over there, he says that he saw, and the simple pshat in the pasuk is he's seeing things that are opposing Yiddishkeit, which is klippa, really, right? And it says there that he saw ruach sa'ora, a strong wind, v'anan godl, and a heavy cloud, v'goymer, etc. And there's a third expression there. I think it's a fire or something. And basically, Kabbalah says that this is a reference to these three forces of klippa. Now again, it doesn't explain why there's three. Just there are three. It's the one type of klippa, which is the klippa, which is complete klippa. And it's for some reason in the number, always the number three. Right? Whenever you want to refer to the real klippa, we say shalosh klippa tazmeis legamri. Okay. The three klippas which are completely impure or completely, they don't have good in them, so to speak. Right? Now, So that's the forces of klipa. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he created the world, he created different forces of klipa. So he created this form of klipa, he created the more neutral kind of klipa, which we're going to talk about in next perek. But this is the lower level of klipa, the klipa that's complete klipa. What comes from this klipa? In other words, what is kept alive by this klipa? Now, before we do the next few lines, I must give you a little bit of context here. Because it's... sometimes it's, especially nowadays, it's like a trouble, almost like it's hard to hear what he's about to say. It's a little goes back to Perek, I don't know if I mentioned it to you in the end of Perek Aleph. He talks about the Nefesh Habam, it's the animal soul of a Jew being Klippas. It's Klippa, but it's Klippas Noiga, it's neutral Klippa, all this mixture of bad and good, whereas the Nefesh Habam is a non-Jew, is complete Klippa, right? And I explained that these differences brought down, the Rebbe brings down in notes of Netanya, that there's a difference between a regular non-Jew and a Hasidei Umas Olam. There's a section of non-Jews called the righteous of the Gentiles, they call them today, right? I'm not sure that I don't mean the definition necessarily, the same definition they use normally, but it means they keep the seven mitzvahs B'nai Noach, they believe in Hashem, whatever the case is, and they're also Klippas Noega. But just, you know, there's an interesting story. I don't know if I told you when we learned this, but there's an interesting story when the Alter Rebbe was arrested. And essentially, Chassidus was on trial, right? So he was taken to prison, and the simple reason why he was in prison was because there were people that slandered against him that he's supporting Turkey, which was the enemy of Russia at the time. What does that mean? Because he was sending money to Israel for the poor people there. So they said he's supporting Turkey, and it was under Turkish rule at that time, Ottoman Empire. So they said he's treason, but then also they you know, tried to undermine the whole Hasidic way of teaching and so on and so forth. And it was actually a very, very fascinating trial. Because in that trial, the Alter Rebbe had to explain the deep concepts of Hasidus and Kabbalah. Right? For example, they asked him a question, why is it true, because they were accusing him of going against the Tsar, which was like sovereignty at the time, right? Why does he preach that in the spheres, the 10 spheres, Malchus is the lowest one, right? Because it goes Chesed, Chacham and Adas, Chesed, Gura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hoy, Yisrael, Malchus, why is the Lechem not? So he had to explain a whole Shira, Chesedus, to explain. Actually, it's not. Its root is actually higher. Right? Right? Malchus is because Malchus takes from all the others and gives and brings birth. Whatever he had to explain. He had to speak about the Baal Shem Tov. Just parenthetically, a beautiful thing. They asked him if he's a follower of the Baal Shem Tov. And he said, categorically, yes. He said, yes. So one time, so it was asked of the Alter Rebbe, why didn't you just say no? It'd be easy for him. Right? So he said, that even though, of course, in his machshava, in his thoughts, he would never be separated from Lashon anyway, even if he said no, but he didn't want to even for a moment be separated from him on any level. And therefore, he wouldn't, even though it endangered his life, he would never say that he's not a chassid of the Lashon. He'd want to be separated from Lashon even for a moment, even just superficially. Okay. Anyway, so he answered many, many, many questions with great depth and great explanation, and they liked it all. Then they asked him the final question. The final question is, what's this business? And it's at the end of Perek Aleph of Tanya, he says that a Nefesh Habamis of a non-Jew comes from Klippas Atmeis Lagarmi, comes from those three Klippas, right? So then the Alter Rebbe stopped, he didn't answer, and he smiled. And they accepted the smile, and they ended the interrogation. What was going on? What happened was that this is what the Pshat is always taught, that Alter Rebbe smiled as if to say, listen, I answered everything really, really well. You accepted everything, you understood everything I was saying. If you want, I can answer this too, but maybe not. maybe you don't need it. And they figured, you know, maybe let's not go there, and they ended the interview. Okay. So here he's going to say it even in stronger terms, but I just want to give you a bit of context, because it's very important to understand. When we talk about language that we use, right? The language has to be understood in its proper context. See, when we regular people, when we say the word ra, bad, what do we mean? Or evil, right? So, you know, you conjure up images like a murderer, a gunner, a thief, an immoral person, whatever, right? A pedophile, okay, right? But that's not the case in Kabbalah. We talk about ra in Kabbalah, it means absence of elokus, absence of godliness. It doesn't mean the thing we call ra could be a wonderful thing. I'll give you an example. Later on, he says everything that comes from, let's say, non-kosher, right? Everything that's treif. Or anything that's asur, right? How does it exist? Everything has to... See, the principle is this, right? Nothing can exist in the world without a godly force, right? So the question is, something that's completely opposed to godliness, how does it exist? And the answer is that it exists with a very low dose of a godly spark, which is, number one, a low dose, and which is, number two, very hidden. And it's hard to retrieve it, right? So everything exists by, nothing can exist without God. So when we talk about something that's ra, it means that its godliness is completely hidden and not possible to reveal. Right? That's what we mean, ra lagamri, complete bad. The thing could be a wonderful thing, actually. And the reality is, let's say a treifa animal, it's also ra, it's completely bad, but it hasn't done anything wrong, right? A lion hasn't done anything wrong.
Bad for eating, not bad.
No, it actually works the other way around. You can't eat it because it's bad. What does the word bad mean? That's what I'm trying to explain. Why? So let's develop this a little bit. Why actually can't you eat a non-kosher animal, right? The answer is, because our life is all centered around serving Hashem. What does serving Hashem mean? As we learned before, serving Hashem means the ability to refine the world. So we know that in Kabbalah and Chassidus, there's this idea of birur hanitzutzus, refining, releasing the sparks, elevating the food. So when you eat a piece of kosher meat, right, that kosher meat has sparks that, in other words, it's klipas noiga, which means it's good and bad together. Therefore, the sparks are there, much more redeemable than in trade for things, right? And it's possible to elevate the piece of kosher meat and to redeem it. We don't always end up doing that, by the way. If we gluttonous and we eat trade for meat, like just to have a good time, we actually don't elevate it. And in fact, not only don't we elevate it, we bring it down. And it brings us down, as he'll explain in Perek Zayin, right? But it has potential at least to redeem it and to elevate it. Something that's treif also has a godly spark, but that godly spark is so hidden that for all intents and purposes, that entity of bad, the entity of klipa, complete klipa, is something which is not revealing godliness at all. Not only is it not revealing godliness, but it's not possible to redeem that godliness and to elevate it. And therefore, something that's not elevatable, if that's the right word, we can't have anything to do with.
This is very confronting.
Yes, I said it was going to be.
Well.
Right? So therefore, you can't eat something because our purpose in life is serve Hashem. Serve Hashem means elevating the world, elevating the things we come into contact with, right?
Now, so, go back to the line. What does it mean you can do with the line?
What can you...
What's the jungle or whatever?
So when you eat, okay, let's say a lion or a pig or whatever, right?
Yeah.
When you eat it, there's no way in the world you're going to elevate it.
I'm not talking about eating. I'm talking about seeing it in the wild.
Okay, one second. We're going to get in a second. But it does mean, just by the fact that it's clippers, from the three clippers, it means there has to be a distance between us and it. There's some deep engagement that we can't have with it because we can't engage in anything that we can't elevate. Give me 1 second. Right? Now, there is different levels. So I'll give you an example. Something that's treif, right? You can't eat it. But you know, in treif itself, there are different levels, right? So for example, we know that there's certain things you can't eat, but you could have benefit from it. Right? Then there's some things you could... you can't eat, and you also can't benefit from it, like chametz on Pesach, or the first 3 years, the fruit of Orla, the 3 years, right? And those kind of things. Meat and milk, right? So what does that mean? How come they are different? Because there is different levels of engagement. Because sometimes the spark is, so the common denominator between all trade things is that the spark is very hidden, you can't really elevate it. But it depends how hidden it is, and how deep it is. And is there any aspect of it that could be elevated or not? So it could be some that are all usher to eat, but then some you could have benefit from it, right? Depends how deep the clipper is. So eating is a very superficial thing. You eat it to have things. So therefore it's clipper. But then maybe at a deeper level you could have some benefit from it because you can reach it in a different way. But then certain things you can't even have benefit from it because it's permeated so deep, the clipper, that you can't have any benefit from it. Now, it doesn't mean, that's my point I wanted to make, and I'm going to get to your question in a second. It doesn't mean that that thing necessarily is a bad thing. It is klipa, and it's called ra over here, but it's not bad the way we call bad. Meaning it's not going to offend anyone. In fact, the truth is that a treifa animal, for example, actually hasn't done anything wrong. It is not an entity that has rebelled against Hashem. In fact, later on in Tanya, he says a very sharp thing. A yid who rebels against Hashem, in a way, is worse than an animal. Not in essence, we all have an neshama, and the neshama is always pure. But on a functional level, we worse. Why? Because we made a choice to rebel against Hashem. The lion didn't do any choice. It's an entity that Hashem created, where Hashem created an entity where he will not be expressed and revealed and manifested in that being. Right? But that being actually does nothing to undermine its own function. It reveals its own purpose. It does its own purpose. Right? Whatever the purpose of a lion is. Right? Now, there are other aspects of every creation that can be very beneficial. For example, there was a very, very famous sikh of the Rebbe, where the Rebbe introduced a new level of, not a new level, I'm saying an interesting idea, that he says, today we have to be very careful. So he had this whole idea that when you put up pictures around children in the crib and things like that, you shouldn't put pictures of a treif animal, right? Famous thing. So they asked the Rebbe, what does that mean? So can you go see a zoo? Right? Can you have a textbook that has pictures of treif animals when you learn in Chumash, but the animal you're not supposed to eat? The Rebbe said, of course. If it's been used for educational purposes or to marvel at Hashem's creation, like going to a zoo, of course you can, because that has some function, right? That's its function. But it's not a function of deep engagement, is it? It's a function from afar. You understand? It's different. So David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Morabu Masecha Hashem, how great are your actions, Hashem? He's talking about, amazing, you go to the wild, apparently you go to the Kruger Park in South Africa, which I've never been, but apparently it's amazing, right?
I believe you've never been.
No, I've never been. I'm not that interested in animals, Zuchal, right? But apparently...
Shlomo HaMelech's throne only kosher animals?
No. Say what I'm saying? In fact, till today, there are some shuls that have pictures of lions on it. Mm-hmm. Right, lions on it. I mean, we learn from lions, right? Everything has a purpose. There's nothing of a purpose. It just depends how much you can elevate it or not. In other words, it might even serve a purpose in its being a clipper. It can still serve a purpose. It doesn't reveal elokus, it doesn't reveal godliness, and godliness revealed it. But in fact, the Gemara says an interesting thing. The Gemara says, if the Torah wouldn't have been given, chas v'shalom, we could learn honesty from an ant and sniyut from a cat. I don't know, there's different things, right? Because every animal learns. There's the idea of the animal singing shira. There's a famous thing people say today called, I forgot what it's called. What's it called? Perek shira or something, which is based on some medrash about all the songs that the animals sing to Hashem. Oh, good, that's true. But it's still klipa. Two things are not contradictory, right? So it's not evil, as I'm saying. When we say ra in Tanya, we mean ra means bad. It doesn't have any connection to elokus. It doesn't reveal elokus. Doesn't mean it doesn't have a function. Doesn't mean it doesn't have a positive function. Why am I saying this? Because we're about to say about the. Sorry, you were going to ask about something else.
Well, people
who don't have a nefesh elokus. Right, not a nefesh elokus. Even nefesh hamam is saying is a low level of klipa. That's what I was getting to. So the concept of a non-Jew, right? Okay, so it needs to be understood in context. We know that a non-Jew is a human being, and a human being has created the image of Hashem. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos. And they can be wonderful people. It doesn't mean that the nefesh hamam is not klipa. Right? Most of the world is klipa, as I was saying, like the world. It's more about, I'll tell you like this, it's more about understanding the uniqueness of a yid rather than, it's more about the uniqueness of a Jew than the negative of a non-Jew, if you know what I'm trying to say. One thing is absolutely clear in Tanya, and this is we learn Tanya, we have to be ready for this, right? That the difference between a yid and a non-Jew is infinitely different. Infinitely. Different world. The Maharal Prak says that we know that the famous idea that the world is made up of four parts, doimem, tzameach, chai, medaber, and the inanimate, the things that grow, that grow vegetation, the animal kingdom and the human being. Says the Maharal, there's a fifth level. That's the yid. Right? Says Maral, if that's the case, so what do we say? What should we say there's five levels? Why do we say four levels? If there's in fact five levels, we should say five levels. He says, no, because the fifth level is different. The four levels are levels in the world. So the world is made up of four levels. The Yid is not part of the world. Yid is a separate entity. The Ben Ish Chai says, right? I'm just giving you different sources all over the place. So Ben Ish Chai says that it's like the hand. That the four fingers are like the four things of the world. The thumb is like the Yid. Why? It's part of the hand, but it's not part of the hand. That's the Yid. He lives in this world, but it's not his address. Yes, we say it in Perek Beis. He said the Nefesh HaBamis of a Yid is Klippa, but it's the higher level of Klippa.
It's Klippa
Snoga. Yeah. In the notes that the Rebbe has on Tanya, he says, and the same would apply to a non-Jew that is Chassidu Umis Oilo. I don't know how exactly how to define that, but
which I'm going to say is 99.9% of people.
I don't know what the level of... See, I don't know if you have to say that. I'll tell you why. Because a non-Jew can be the lower level of Klippa. It doesn't make him bad. That's what I'm saying. He can be a wonderful person. That's not primary yet. But it's a non-Jew. It's different.
The mashal that you used of giving the gift without the card, that's these people?
That's even our Nefesh HaBamis. That's all Klippas.
Oh, that's our Nefesh HaBamis as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless we elevate our Nefesh HaBamis. Klippas Noga is elevatable. It's different. But Klippa always gets its life a little bit different, right? And I mean, also again, later on in Tanya, and I think this is, you know, it's no point being around the bush. It is what it is. Like, I mean, not is what it is. Is what it is what you say, like, it's unfortunate. It is the reality that in Tanya makes a huge, a Yid is a different thing. In fact, later on we learn that even the guf, even the body of Yid is completely different. Not only the Nefesh HaBamis, but the body of Yid is different. In fact, when we say every day in davening, this is another shir to understand what this means exactly, but it says that when we say every day in davening that Hashem chose us, uvonu v'charta, right? Let's take a step back. We believe in Amma Nifchar, correct? We believe in the chosen nation. I know in today's society a lot of people are uncomfortable with that, but that's the reality. It doesn't make anyone else evil, by the way. It just means that Hashem chose us. I mean, that's also responsibility. You know the famous shtetl joke about the Yid that went through all the tzaras and the persecutions and the pogroms, and that Hashem, he says, maybe you could choose someone else today. Right? Okay. So choosing doesn't mean, right? It's not always covered. But the fact is, Bonim atim l'Hashem alakechem. A Yid is a child of Hashem, right? What was I going to say? So when this idea of the chosen nation is not just a neshama. In fact, on the contrary, we learn in Chassidus, and again, this is not the time to explain in depth. But we learn in Chassidus that choosing, the word choosing, only relates to something which is similar to something else, right? If you have a very, very rotten apple, you have a fresh apple, and you choose the fresh apple, that's not called choosing, because obviously you're going to choose the fresh apple. Like, what else would you do? That's not choosing. Choosing means, that's not free will, right? When Hashem chose the Yidin, Uvonu v'chartem mikol am v'loshen, He chose us among all the nations of the world. Later on in Tanya it says, actually refers to the guf of the Yid, the body of the Yid. The body of the Yid is chosen by Hashem. Which is why when a person dies, Chas v'Shalom, to retrieve such kedusha, and reverence and the Torah and the whole thing, right? The way we treat our bodies is unbelievable, yeah. What's the idea? Because everyone has its own function. The world is a world of Klippa, but the world is an important place. The world is where we fulfill the mission of, we said this last time, the world is where we fulfill the mission of making a dwelling place for Hashem, right? The idea is to bring Hashem into the world of Klippa, right? Everything else in the world besides the Yid, but you see, that's a difference. A non-Jew is a part of the world. A Yid is not part of the world. A Yid is high in the world. In many, right? And that's why our existence is not alpi teva. Existence is not alpi nature. Remember there was a video I once saw where someone came to the Rebbe and asked the Rebbe a bracha for something to do with health, and he said, "Didoktorim zogin," that the doctors say that alpi teva, that according to nature, this is not going to get better. And the Rebbe looks at him and says, what does a Yid have a connection to Teva? What's the connection between you and Teva? Okay, we work through Teva, with Teva, and so on, but we're higher than Teva. Different world. It manifests itself in the names of Hashem also. name of Hashem is Elohim and Yud Kei Vav Kei. The world is created through Elohim. A non-Jew is part of the creation of Elohim. It's still a godly creation, obviously. But it's with a huge amount of tzimtzum. Right? But a Yid is from Shem Havai, Yud Kei Vav Kei. Different. It's the name of infinity. Now, again, this is Chas V'Shalom. This shouldn't mean, it's nothing to do with mistreating a non-Jew. On the contrary, we learn in Gemara about the unbelievable respect of the Tanoim and Moroim and for non-Jews. Rabbi Yochanan said that Me'olam lo hikdimani Adam Me'olam, Me'olam lo hikdimani Shalom Adam Me'olam. No one ever greeted me first. He always made sure to greet everyone first, to be the first to greet. And he said, everyone, including a Nochri Shabashuk, even a non-Jew in the marketplace. No, right? You know, it's interesting, just to put it into context, because I know it's a little bit hard sometimes to understand this properly, especially in today's times, where we live in... You know, it's easier to understand this prokim where you lived in evil regimes and in persecuting nations. Nowadays, it's a bit more harder, right? But I'll just tell you my own experience, how I witnessed the Rebbe, how I used to relate to non-Jews, right? On the one hand, there was no one like the Rebbe who spoke about Jewish pride. I mean, unbelievable. The difference between a Yid and not a Yid, it was very often. And being proud of being a Yid, and on the contrary, when a Yid is proud of his Jewishness, he's respected by the non-Jews, lots of sichas. And yet, when non-Jews came to the Rebbe for dollars, whatever it was, or even in the street, even a cleaner in the house, whatever the case is, the amount of dignity that the Rebbe gave was unbelievable. Two things are not contradictory. It's a creation of Hashem, and it's a human being, and created by Tzelem Elohim and in the image of God. All good, all true. I think it's more about understanding what a Yid is, really. Right? Yeah? Good? Okay. So he says, so I'm just introduction to what he says now, because he's giving what comes from Klipa. He said, and from them comes v'nim shochais, and is drawn down nafshois, the souls of kol umeis oiv de gilulim, all the nations of the idol worshippers, b'kiyum gufam, and the life force that keeps their bodies alive. V'nafshois kol balachayim atzmeim, and all the souls of the, meaning the godly sparks, of all the animals that are tmeim, which means they're impure, they're not allowed to be eaten. V'asurim b'achila, and we're not allowed to eat them. The kiyum gufam, or the actual existence of the actual existence, right? And the kiyum v'chayas, and the existence kol ma'acholis asuras, of all the forbidden foods. Mehatzomeach, which comes from the things that grow, not only animals. Going for example, orlo, like orlo. Orlo is the first 3 years not being able to eat a fruit, right? Or klah hakerem, or the fourth year until you redeem it and so on. Moshkosav eitz chaim, shamim tes periglov. And similarly, what else comes from complete klipa? V'chein kiyum v'chayas. So to the existence and the life force of kol ha'maisa dibur u'machshav, of all actions, speech, and thought. Shokol shasal loisaseh, of all 365 negative commandments v'anfein and their branches. V'shokosh shom sof perekeh. You know, that's what he's saying, because when we do something wrong, when you do an aveira, for example, right? That action also is an existence. Nothing else can exist. Nothing can exist without Hashem. So, right? Even things which are against Hashem. Right? That's just an interesting concept. So when we do something wrong, or when we eat something wrong, or we say something wrong, or we act in a strong way, even if it's a complete avera, that action, that thought, that speech is an existence. It's something that exists and has a spark of Hashem. Yet it comes from klipa. So where does it get its chayas from? Where does it get its life force from? Everything has to have a life force, otherwise it couldn't exist. That life force comes from the shalosh klipas atzmeis legamri, from the three lower klipas. Yeah? Okay. So that's all complete klipa. Yeah? I'm not sure this is 100% connected with this, but when Mashiach comes, it says, there's a pasuk that says, "V'zruach hatuma avri min ha'aretz." Hashem says, "I will remove all impurity from the world, so there won't be klip anymore." Right. So what Chassidus explains is that doesn't mean that because real klipa cannot be transformed; it means it'll be removed. That doesn't mean that the entities which it gave chayis to will be removed, right? But it means that all the negativity will be removed. So, like for example, the world will change. So there's a medrash, and I'm not sure if it's connected with this, but it could be, that there will be a time where pig will become kosher. Mashiach comes, right? So I guess that's a pshat, because there won't be klip anymore, so therefore the elukus will come through it to be able to be eaten. That kind of thing, right? But for now, that's what it is. Anything that's forbidden to us is because it belongs to the world of klipa, and if it's forbidden, it belongs to the world of complete klipa. Because later, next chapter, we'll learn about the things that belong to a neutral klipa, which are everything else, even things that we do which are mundane but kosher, are still klipa, unless we elevate them, and that belongs to the second class of klipa, but that's different. Okay. All right, so next, as I said, next chapter is going to explain the other form of klipa, klipas noiga, which we're going to leave, but we'll just learn something else for a few minutes, because we are going to take a 2-week break now. So I don't want to start Perek Zayin today. So I just thought we would learn a little bit of a mimer, which I'll learn with you quickly, on this week's parashah. Non-Jews not, but to Jews, yes.
When
to
Jews
were being when they were always, when the non-Jews were fighting with them, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, look, yeah. What's that? When someone grew up in Poland, for example, where there was pogroms every so often and there was laws against Yiddishkeit and like that, so it was, there wasn't much explanation to do. I mean, Yid was a Yid and the guy was a guy. It was like, and they were the bad guys.
Yeah. Well, if you had no exposure.
Well, where they lived, it was like that, right?
Yeah.
Because you find that, and that's it. Often I know in conversation things come up like that. Like, you find people that came from that culture have a very, sometimes not just understanding, they not just understand what it says here in Tanya, but they also have a very disrespectful approach to non Jews. And it comes from a culture, it comes from the experience, right? And I mean, the Chiddush we live today, I mean, the Rebbe would always mention that nowadays we have to have gratitude. We live in lands which are called Malchus Shel Chesed, benevolent governments, non-Jewish ones, but benevolent governments, which changes the perspective a little bit. That's why you need to understand more the essence of what this is saying than just, you know, kind of thing. Okay. All right, so just a little bit, I'm not going to do everything inside because it's a little bit late, but just a little bit on this week's parasha. This week's parasha is the Pasuk of Parah Aduma, right? So it says that, let's have a look. Start with the first pasuk, and this was a maimon that was said Yud Beis Tammuz, the 12th of Tammuz. This Shabbos is 12th of Tammuz. It's the day that the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, was released from jail under communist regime, right? And it was a very miracle. He was sentenced to jail for spreading Yiddishkeit, and he was sentenced to death actually, and then it was taken away, and he was sent into exile, and it was supposed to be 3 years, and ended up being a few days later, he was completely released. As a result, he had to leave Russia, actually, but it sowed the seeds for many, many years later, today, what became in Russia, the blossoming of Yiddishkeit and so on and so forth. Okay. Dabar Hashem Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, and he said, Zois chukas haTorah. This is the chukai of Torah. It says, V'yikhu eilecho parah adumo. Pirush Rashi. Rashi explains, what does it mean, V'yikhu eilecho? It says, they should bring to you, they should bring to Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, La'ola mini kras al shemichu, that the Parah Aduma will always be called on the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. We, in fact, even the first one, we say, Parah she'osa Moshe b'midbar. We refer to it as the Parah, the red cow that Moshe Rabbeinu made in the midbar. Right? So, Tzorach Lovin, we have to understand that Iraq Parah harishoina, only the first cow, osa Moshe. La'ola mini kras kol ha'poras, why were all the red cows, which to date, by the way, there were nine of them, right? The Shmoina HaParis, the eight ones, She'osu Achakach, that was made afterwards. The Gampara series and also the tenth one. Shiyasa Melech HaMashiach, the Mashiach will make. Al Shmoy Shal Moshe, why is it all called on the name of Moshe Rabbeinu? So like it's fine, you know, the Issa with Lekutei Torah. It says in Lekutei Torah from the Alter Rebbe, that Tam al Zeh, Shebe Pora Adum, and there's a famous question on the first Pasuk of this week's Parsha. When it introduces the mitzvah of Pora Adum, it does not say, this is the chukah, meaning the mitzvah of the Pora Adum, it says, this is the mitzvah of the Torah. Zois chukas ha-Torah, that's what it says, right? Hu lefi she-mitzvah Pora Adum, because the mitzvah of Pora Adum is klolus ha-Torah. Is because the reason that, really it's talking about just the mitzvah of Pora Adum, but it's called the mitzvah of the Torah because it represents the entirety of the Torah and there are many reasons for that. Let's see. So, but it does. For reasons we'll see a bit later, it is the essence, the mitzvah of Pora Adum is really the essence of the entire Torah. Therefore, lochin, therefore, k'moisha Torah nekras ha-shmoisha moisha, just as the Torah, he's also called by the name of Moshe. It's called Torah Moshe, right? It's a Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu gave. Moshe Kosov Zichru Torah Moshe Avdi, like the pasuk says, remember the Torah of Moshe, my servant. Gam came Paraduma, so too with Paraduma, she klolus haTorah is the whole Torah. Nikras al Shmoy Shel Moshe. It's called the name of Moshe, right? Okay, we'll skip it a little bit. But let me just mention, one of the reasons that the Pora Adum is called the general mitzvah of the Torah is because we know, we've talked about this many times, the general formula of how we serve Hashem is the idea of Rotzu V'Shuv. You remember this? Rotzu V'Shuv means, Rotzu means to run towards Hashem and to disconnect from the world. Real Rotzu means to the point of actually wanting to leave the world altogether. And then we realize that no, in order to really serve Hashem, sure, we have to return to the world, we have to be engaged in the Gashmis, right? That was the whole idea of the sons of Aaron, that they had Ratzu, they came close to Hashem, but they didn't have the Shuv. Pora Adumah represents Ratzu and Shuv. Pora Adumah was a mixture of burnt ashes from the cow and with spring water. Fire represents the idea of Ratzu because it goes up. Water, which is poured down, represents the idea of Shuv, which is coming back. So Pora Adumah is the idea of combination between fire and water. That's what Rotzu V'Shuv. That's one idea of why the Pora Adumah is the essence of the entire Torah. Okay. But another idea is that it has to do with the concept of Mesiris Nefesh. Following up with last week about Mesiris Nefesh, right? Because one of the things we find by Pora Adumah is that it's the ultimate chuk. It's the ultimate chukim, right? Mitzvah without a reason. To do a mitzvah completely without a reason is the idea of Mesiris Nefesh, about surrender. That's what it is, about surrender. Let's see. We'll see what that has to do with Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's see. V'yesh levayir, so we can explain this. So, go to the next paragraph on the right-hand side. V'yesh levayir. Yeah, you see there? V'yesh levayir al pima shakosu b'tanya. He's also connected with Tanya. We can explain about what is explained in Tanya much later. Da'atam al zeh shetziva Moshe Rabbeinu ledoir shenichnesu l'oretz. That the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu commanded the nation that went into the land of Israel, likrois kriya shva pamay mechol yom, to reach Shema twice daily, lekabel malchus shemaim mesiris nefesh, in order to accept the yoke of heaven with mesiris nefesh. Let me just stop and just explain what he's talking about. You know, we say Shema every day, right? Shema is the foundation of Yiddishkeit. However, Shema wasn't given to the Jewish people until they were finished with the desert. You know that, yeah? Where does Shema appear in the Torah? In the book of Dvarim. First time the Eden heard the Shema was in the last 37 days of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. So it wasn't even the original generation that got the Torah. It was the generation that were going into the Eretz Yisrael, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu in the book of Dvarim is Moshe Rabbeinu's book, so to speak, right? Him talking, he tells them they have to read the Shema. And what is Shema? Shema is about Mesiris Nefesh, about accepting upon ourselves Hashem beyond any limitation. And it's about loving Hashem b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol meidecha, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, which is really Mesiris Nefesh. Right? B'chol nafshecha, giving up your life even for Hashem, right? That's what Shema is. Yeah? You know, at the end of Yom Kippur, I don't know if you ever saw it in the Machzor. at the end of Yom Kippur, when we scream Shema Ne'ila, it says when you say Shema at the very last part of Yom Kippur, you're supposed to have in mind that you'd be ready to give up your life for Hashem. If a person has it in mind, Hashem considers it as if you have given up your life for Hashem. The Shalom HaKadosh says that thing, right? I'm just bringing it up because the Shema is connected to the concept of Hashem Echad. There's one God, nothing else, and I'm ready to give myself over completely to Him, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu shared the Shema with the Yidden just as they were about to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. And Alter Rebbe says, why? Because they were going to a land that would now have to keep Torah and Mitzvahs in a physical, mundane world, different to the Midbar, as we know. So he says over there in Tanya, Humipnei Shekiyum HaTorah Mitzvahs, because the fulfillment of Torah Mitzvahs, who be Zechirus Inyan HaMesiras Nefesh, it comes together with remembering the concept of Mesiras Nefesh. You can only really keep Torah Mitzvahs if you surrender, right? So therefore, Yesh Leimar. So we can say, Zesh Moshe Davke Tzivul Adorash Nichnas L'Aretzu. So why was it Moshe Rabbeinu who gave the Mitzvah of Shema? Meaning it was in Dvarim, it was in his section of the Torah, so to speak. Ki Mesiras Nefesh or Inyan HaBitul. Because what is Mesiras Nefesh? As we learned last week, Mesiras Nefesh comes from an idea of complete Bitul. You're one with Hashem, you complete nothing. Just your identity is Hashem, right? Now the problem is it's very hard to have Mesiras Nefesh. Why? Because a person is a Metzius. People are entities, their existence, they exist. Right? Our default position is not Bittul. I don't know if you've realized that, right? The default position of a human being is not Bittul. Because our consciousness is a Nefesh Abamis. Maybe from the Shom it is, but not from a Nefesh Abamis, right? Going back to Tanya, right? Nefesh Abamis is Klippa. When we're born, it's Klippa, not later, before we mess it up. Mess it up for sure is a problem, but even before you mess it up, it's Klippa, right? It's an existence that fights, that's into self-preservation, not elokus. So the person is Metzius. Hepech inyan abitul, right? It's opposite of bitul. And we say that in order to really survive godly spiritual life, you have to have bitul. So, lochen therefore, b'chdei she'inyan ha-mesiras nefesh yetzlo b'goloi. Therefore, in order for Mesiras Nefesh to be with a person in a revealed way, in a way that it's going to be fixed in the person day and night, without forgetting about it, you need a very special infusion of power for that. You need a koyach given to you from somewhere to have that bittul, right? Where does it come? Nesinas koyach is a famous expression. It means a giving of koyach we need, right? Where does it happen? When a sinus koyach al day Moshe, it comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because Moshe inyan abitul, because Moshe is bitul. That's what, if you want to personify Moshe, it's bitul. V'nachnu mo, as Moshe Rabbeinu said, we are nothing. We are, what are we? Why was that, by the way? Because by Moshe Rabbeinu, he's an Hashem who was very, very high, and his Hashem shone in a revealed way, and therefore his animal soul didn't get in the way. Right? That's very simple. And therefore, since Moshe Rabbeinu was the one to command the Jewish people to accept upon themselves Pamayim, twice a day, Malchus Shemayim Mesiras Nefesh, the yoke of heaven Mesiras Nefesh, Aliday Zeh, so through that, Nitan Lahem HaKoyach. So therefore, it gives them the Koyach, Liskor Tomin Ina Mesiras Nefesh. Right? Now, So it means that's why Hashem says the Torah will always be called yours, and we'll see why that's going to the Paradum in a minute. Why? Ki kiyum haTorah mitzvaseh, because the fulfillment of Torah and its mitzvahs. And the Paraduma, going back to Paraduma, which we said before, is Klolus Torah Mitzvahs. Paraduma represents the mitzvahs. How do you do mitzvahs? Through Mesiras Nefesh. How do you have Mesiras Nefesh? From Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu that you must make the Paraduma because you have to infuse Torah Mitzvahs with the concept of Mesiras Nefesh. And it'll always be called on your name. It'll always be connected to you. It'll always be connected with the Koyach that you give the Jewish people, which is the Koyach of Mesiras Nefesh. Toloi inyan mesiras nefesh, right? The koyach and the power liskor tomed inyan mesiras nefesh, the power to remember inyan mesiras nefesh. All the day Moshe is through Moshe Rabbeinu. And the next few lines, he makes reference to the previous Rebbe, because this was said on Yud Beis Tammuz, which was the, right, and therefore, as we said last week, the idea of tzaddikim in every generation is the spark of Moshe Rabbeinu manifesting itself in the tzaddikim and the Rebbes and everything throughout the generations. And he says, this is what we see by the Friedrich Rebbe, this concept of Mesiras Nefesh. Which, by the way, that's an understatement, right? The Friedrich Rebbe's Mesiras Nefesh was incredible in a very revealed and open way, right? You know the story of the Friedrich Rebbe when he was arrested. There are many, many stories about how he acted with the communists, and his strength was unbelievable, right? So they wanted him to speak and reveal certain information, and he said no. So they pointed a gun at him, and they said, "This gun, this little toy, has made many people speak." So the Friedrich Rebbe, in a very proud way, turned around to them and said, "This little toy only frightens someone who has many gods and only one world. Because I only have one God and two worlds, it really doesn't frighten me." And there are many, many stories like that, which is very brazen with them. He was very like disrespectful to them, just because he was fighting a clipper, a real clipper, right? The real, real clipper, right? So he makes reference to this, and we see the Mesiras Nefesh, and this is the concept of Yud Beis Tammuz, sort of the Sadeh of a Mesiras Nefesh. But then he goes on, I'll just say it outside, he goes on and he says, what's the specific connection to Parah Adumah? The specific connection to Parah Adumah the specific connection of Mesiras Nefesh and the Parah Adumah is the fact that it's a chayk. But it's a chayk not like other chukim. So he goes into this whole idea, and this is talked about a lot in Hasidus and in a very deep way. We'll just give the point of it. And that is that really every mitzvah is a chayk. We've talked about this before, right? Why? What is the origin of every mitzvah? The origin of every mitzvah is the rotzen of Hashem, the will of Hashem. Which by Hashem, you can have this concept called the will, which is higher than logic. Right? That's what he wants. That's him. What is will? What is will? Will means it's the deep will of the neshama. It's where the neshama turns to. The Hashem's mitzvahs are all his rotzen. It's his will. It doesn't have to have a reason. It could be just because that's him. It's an expression of him. It's a manifestation of him. Later on, they evolve into reasons. It gets explained. Even chukim, chukim sometimes descend into some form of reason, but sometimes reasons which are beyond us. It might be a reason just too hard for us to understand. It might be a godly reason. It might be something that's very, very difficult to understand. That's why Shlomo HaMelech said that he was able to understand the reasons for all the chukim, except for Parah Adumah. Parah Adumah is that one mitzvah that remains in its purity, remains a chuk, right? There is some reason that explains at the highest level of Atzilus there's some sort of connection. The reason is only a Moshe Rabbeinu can be connected to that. For most part, even Shlomo HaMelech said he couldn't reach Parah Adumah, right? That's why when we talk about this concept of Mesiras Nefesh, we talk about this concept of Mesiras Nefesh, which is surrender, which has got to do with the whole Torah, and how Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who reminds us of Mesiras Nefesh and gives us koyach to have Mesiras Nefesh. Where does it all come out? In the mitzvah of Parah Adumah. Mitzvah Parah Adumah, which Moshe Rabbeinu gave us, that's the mitzvah that's called on Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Because that's the mitzvah that represents the Mesiras Nefesh of all the mitzvahs. In other words, with every other mitzvah, on a subtle level, you can keep it even without complete surrender because it makes sense. Some of them make more sense, some make less sense. Parah Adumah is one that makes no sense whatsoever. And therefore, that's why you need complete surrender, and that's why that actually gives an insight into the whole Torah. Because the truth is, when we keep all mitzvahs, we have to keep them as chukim too. Mustn't keep them because of their reason, we have to keep them because this is the Ratzon of Hashem. But where do we get that from? We get that from the concept of Parah Adumah, which is the representation of all the mitzvahs. And that's why it has to be Moshe Rabbeinu making the Parah Adumah, because he's the one that infuses people with bittul and Mesiras Nefesh. And that's why Hashem said, it'll always be called on your name, even the ones you don't make, because it's your thing. Right? It's your concept of infusing the Yidden with Mesiras Nefesh. Okay, we'll leave it there. So again, next 2 weeks we're off, and then we'll start again.